From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Scout out talented students at HBCUs, prepare them for the rigors of law school, mentor them throughout their careers. The Fannie Angelos Program for Academic Excellence aims to boost diversity in the legal profession. We hear from co-founders, University of Baltimore Law Professors Michael Higginbotham and Michael Meyerson, who describes the grit law school requires and the challenges students face.
If we do our job as professors right, we shake your confidence. And you have to get back up. And if society or your family or your friends or your classmates are saying you don't belong because of where you're from, you don't belong because of the color of your skin, it just makes it that much harder.
And we meet two graduates at the start of their law careers, Anise Brown and Keon Eubanks, on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Aimed at scouting out talented students, the Fannie Angelos Program for Academic Excellence is a partnership between the University of Baltimore Law School and Maryland's four historically black colleges and universities, Bowie State, Coppin, Morgan, and the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. Participants receive help studying for the LSAT, the Law School Admissions Test, and applying for law school, as well as mentoring help and career counseling. A select group of students in the program receive full tuition scholarships to the University of Baltimore's Law School. Michael Higginbotham, the Dean Joseph Curtis Professor of Law, is one of the co-founders of the program. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And Michael Meyerson, the DLA Piper Professor of Law, is also a co-founder and now directs the program. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
This effort began 22 years ago as the Baltimore Scholars, but in 2014, Peter Angelos, owner of the Baltimore Orioles and a lawyer himself, made a large donation in honor of his older sister, Fannie Angelos, to revitalize the program, and it was renamed then. What inspiration does Fannie Angelos provide the program?
Fannie's just an amazing inspiration for our students, and she has a tremendous life story. She immigrated to this country when she was 5 years old, came through Ellis Island, did not speak English. English was a second language for her. She overcame that language barrier, went on to college and law school at the University of Baltimore. She was one of three women in her class in 1949 when she entered the law school. She often told stories about how one of the professors said, you know, what are you doing here in law school? Are you looking to find a husband? And she said, no, I'm looking to become a lawyer just like everyone else. And that's who Fannie Angelos was, dedicated person, a strong person, and a perfect inspiration for our students, because many of our students have to overcome obstacles as well. And so Fannie's life of overcoming obstacles, of having grit, of being able to stick to a problem and solve it, those are examples of what we're trying to instill in our students.
Professor Meyerson, you have said often this is not a diversity program, it's a talent search. What's the significance of that distinction?
Most importantly, it's a matter of respect. We did not feel like we are a charity program helping poor students. We went to where talented students were and weren't being recognized. So what we believe and what our record proves, if you find talent, level the playing field, diversity inevitably happens.
And because the program recruits from HBCUs, which are open to all students, you contend it would withstand a legal challenge?
It is race neutral. We have students who are white, who are Asian, who are Hispanic, as well as African American. Now, the schools are predominantly black. That's obviously true. But these four schools are dedicated to diversity in every way. They are filled with people whose parents not only didn't go to law school, many of them didn't go to college. Many of them do not know how the academic game is played. So we are an elite race-neutral program that is centered in a predominantly African-American environment.
the numbers about African Americans were a big surprise to me as this program got some attention these days. The percentage of African American associates at law firms across the country has declined every year since 2009, except for a small increase last year. Just 4 out of 100 associates are black, according to data collected by the National Association for Law Placement. And just 8% of law firm partners are anything other than white. Why is it important that people who work in the justice system be as diverse as the population?
Well, I think there are two main reasons. One is that oftentimes lawyers provide services to the communities that they come from. And if you don't have a diverse legal system, oftentimes services aren't provided to many communities. And so if diversity will help to make sure that legal services are provided in almost all communities. The other thing, and I think even more importantly, is perception, how the legal system is perceived. And I think it's so important that people perceive the legal system as one that is fair. And when you have diversity, the perception of fairness in the legal system, that all parties, all groups are recognized, are participants, the aspect of fairness is really prevalent. So I think those two aspects are huge, very important. And it's oftentimes that the Supreme Court has mentioned these aspects in upholding diversity programs.
I'd like to add a third reason. If you want the best people, you want to look everywhere. You show me a bunch of white men, and I will guarantee they're not the best possible because you're excluding all these groups. So if you want quality, you better look everywhere.
What are you looking for when you select scholars?
We're looking for two things. One is basic God-given talent. We want smart people. But we're also looking for what educators call grit. Grit is essentially the ability to be knocked down and then get back up and then look for help. People who have the strength to realize that asking for help, asking for guidance, is evidence of strength, not weakness. So we need the courage to fail and the courage to ask for help and the courage to move forward.
And how is it determined which students will get a full ride?
In order to get the free ride, several things have to happen. You have to have a 3.5 GPA, you have to get a 152 on the LSAT, and you have to be admitted to the law school. No one gets a scholarship from this program unless they go through the normal admissions realm. But one of the things we do, because what we found is character counts, is we interview them. Often we'll have 8 people interviewing one poor undergraduate, and we want to establish the fact that they know how to learn, they know how to fail, and they know how to work with others.
How many students have participated in the program?
The way we count on numbers is we've gotten over 90 students admitted into law school over the last several years.
What kinds of law schools?
Well, we, of course, urge them to come to the University of Baltimore because we're very proud of our own institution. But they've gone to schools such as Maryland, Columbia, USC, Howard, and several others.
And how many have received scholarships to UB?
About 35, I would say, over the years.
What types of jobs have they gone on to?
A lot of judicial clerkships, government service, public defender service, state's attorney's office, and we have several at major law firms in Baltimore as well as around the country.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with University of Baltimore law professors Michael Higginbotham and Michael Meyerson. They co-founded the Fannie Angelos Program for Academic Excellence, which recruits students from Maryland's HBCUs and prepares them to apply for law school. What are the barriers that keep students from less privileged backgrounds from considering law school?
One of the things that has really surprised us is actually how many barriers, because when we first started the program, we were thinking that, there were race discrimination barriers, gender discrimination barriers, but there are all kinds of barriers. There's a number of our students have family issues. They have parents that are drug dependent, parents that are economically challenged, unemployed. We have students with physical handicaps. We have students that have had difficulties with learning disabilities. So we've had all kinds of students dealing with barriers. And one of the key things about the program is that we help these students overcome the barriers.
What about students who have gotten into law school, which is notoriously rigorous? What are the challenges that keep them from graduating?
One of the other barriers, in addition to the ones that Professor Higginbotham just mentioned, are what I call toxic voices, whether it's their community, whether it's society, whether it's certain classmates. Telling them that they don't belong is a major issue. Law school is hard enough. If we do our job as professors right, we shake your confidence. And you have to get back up. And if society or your family or your friends or your classmates are saying you don't belong because of where you're from, you don't belong because of the color of your skin, it just makes it that much harder. And if you combine that with situations where money can be very tight, you're doing an exam and the next day you get an eviction notice, or the next day you find out a relative is sick and you have to take care of them, all of these are burdens, as Professor Higginbotham put it, that they have to deal with as they compete with their classmates.
So how do you address that as an example?
Well, one is to explain, and this goes back to the how do you get them into law school, is explaining how the game is played. So sometimes people will get deferred exams when they're the death in the family. If a student doesn't know to ask, they take the exam on no sleep, no studying, and they get a bad grade when it was not what they should have gotten. Sometimes you give them financial advice. Sometimes you explain to them how to control credit. Sometimes you counsel them on how to avoid family members who are hurting them and not helping them. I have a motto during finals. Thanksgiving is a meal, not a weekend. So you teach them scheduling. You empower them to make the choices that let them succeed.
And one of the other things that we try to do for them is if they have a toxic environment at home, we try to provide housing for them on campus. That's one of the things we're working on, to provide housing so that they can be out of the toxic situation.
Summer internships are a vital part of any law student's resume. How does the Fannie Angelis program help scholars get internships?
Well, one of the things we found is that, particularly when the job market gets tight, is that a lot of students volunteer for unpaid internships. That's how they get their foot in the door. And many of our students were economically challenged, and so they weren't able to do that. So what the program does is, one, it identifies places that are willing to hire.
Hire
law students. No, hire for summer internships. And then we try and place them in those internships and pay them a stipend for the summer so that they don't have to work for free.
Minorities make up about a quarter of law school graduates in the country, but very few work at private law firms. What types of jobs do they take instead?
They might be solo practitioners. They might run their own. They might work for government. They might work in the criminal justice system, either prosecutor or defense.
And how do their careers then differ?
Every time you're denied a certain opportunity at the beginning, you're denied a lot more opportunities at the end. So the large law firms, for example, will both be very, very well paying, but will lead to other opportunities in higher government rankings and judicial nominations. It's just about opportunities, and the more opportunities you lose at the beginning, the more doors that are shut at the very beginning, at the end you're going to have the same problem of shut doors.
And one of the missions of the Fannie Angelis program is to help students who would have been average lawyers become great lawyers. How do you do that?
Well, you do it with a lot of sweat. And one of the things we talk about in terms of the program is that it's labor intensive. It's not a big secret how to level the playing field. You provide guidance, you provide assistance. Students meet extra time to provide tools to take examinations, to do well on examinations, how to do legal reasoning, how to write well. And we found that this really helps them to succeed in law school, because in law school, it's all about being able to communicate well, orally as well as on paper.
I want to thank you both for telling us about the program. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Michael Higginbotham and Michael Meyerson co-founded the Fannie Angelis Program for Academic Excellence, which recruits students from Maryland's HBCUs and prepares them to apply for law school. When we come back, two scholars from the program will tell us about their law school experiences. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. A unique partnership between the University of Baltimore Law School and Maryland's four historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs, aims to increase diversity in the legal profession. We're talking about the Fannie Angelos Program for Academic Excellence, which mentors undergraduate students throughout the process of studying for the LSAT and applying for law school. The program also offers a handful of students a full scholarship to the University of Baltimore Law School. Joining me now is Anise Brown. She graduated from the University of Baltimore Law School last year and now works as a law clerk for Baltimore State's Attorney's Office. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you for being here. Also with us is a fellow participant in the program, Keon Eubanks. He graduated from the University of Baltimore Law School this past May and is preparing to take the bar exam in February. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
What made you apply for the program?
I actually never envisioned myself as becoming a lawyer. I wanted to study sociology. I realized as a senior in undergrad that I could not afford an advanced degree in sociology. And so I saw an advertisement for the program on campus and applied and surprisingly was accepted. And since then, I've been a part of the family, and Professor Meyerson has just been encouraging us and really giving us a greater vision of ourselves and what our lives could be.
Keon, how about you? How did you connect?
Initially, I wanted to attend business school. I was a business major at Coppin State University, and one day I happened to notice a flyer on the wall offering a full tuition scholarship to law school. I talked with Professor Paul Goss over at Coppin State about it. And he said, you know, there's a lot of overlap between an MBA program and a JD program. And after doing some additional research, I thought to myself, well, I could be really onto something here. And, you know, it was a merit-based effort. Had to maintain at least a 3.5 GPA and go through a rigorous LSAT prep program. LSAT stands for the Law School Admissions Test. And I scored at least a 152 on the LSAT, and it's been a great opportunity.
That LSAT prep course, was that hard?
Definitely. I actually took the LSAT three times before I was able to get the score. And both times that I fell short of getting it, I told Professor Meyerson, like, I cannot do this. I'm done. You know, it's not meant for me. And he continued to encourage me. I tried again, and I finally got the score. And he told us in the beginning, he said the LSAT is not a measurement of how intelligent you are. It's just learning skills. And he was absolutely correct because I took the bar in 2016, and I passed one time.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That must be heartening to you, Keon, facing
yes.
the bar
exam. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because Anise and I came in during the same time back in 2012. We were in the same scholars cohort. So to see her go through the LSAT prep program and to pass the bar exam on the first try, it just really epitomizes the fact that she's so persistent and she has great perseverance. And so many of us are that way, and we relied on each other a lot, whether it be through the LSAT process or when we were actually in law school, because there are many different challenges that a law student will inevitably face.
Tell me a challenge or two that you faced.
I think one of my biggest challenges was being able to fit in culturally. I came from a historically black university, and then going to a predominantly white institution was a little bit different. I wasn't used to being one of the only African Americans in the class. But at the University of Baltimore, we have sort of a motto that we're in co-opetition.
Co-opetition,
where we cooperate while at the same time competing. Obviously, we're all competing as law students, but it's more of a community-based school. So, you know, I met a lot of great people there. We had a lot of professors who would work with us every 2 weeks or so regarding certain skills, whether it be how to take an exam, how to prepare for an exam, make sure you're doing your outlining correctly. All of those skills added up. It wasn't always easy. Some of it you would want to just like sort of push back against because it just seemed like so much extra. You had your studies that you had to deal with, and then in addition, the extra homework from Professor Meyerson, Professor Higginbotham, Professor Kohler. So it was really helpful but stressful at the same time.
Keon, you taught full-time while you were going to law school?
That is true. I taught full-time in Baltimore City at William Pender Hughes Elementary Middle School. I was the middle school English instructor for grades 6, 7th, and 8th. I actually grew up in the neighborhood, so it was a way of giving back. It was one of the best experiences I've had in my professional career. Not teaching.
It was a full-time teaching job.
Full-time teaching job.
How on earth do you do a full-time teaching job and the kind of schedule you had in law school?
Honestly, in retrospect, I do not know how I did it. There were many, many sleepless days or functioning on very little sleep. It was stressful to say the least, but I had to have a job. Even though I was on a full tuition scholarship, I still had to cover my room, board, so that made things a little bit more difficult. So I had to work, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. I think it built a lot of character. It taught me a lot about myself. It taught me a lot about my community and just what can be done if one is persistent, one is focused, and one is driven. And I wanted to show the students there an example of if you really buy into education, your circumstances can change. I'm from the same neighborhood where you are now. I'm still in the neighborhood. I get my hair cut there. My grandmother still lives there. So it was a phenomenal experience, but a lot of sleepless days.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Keon Eubanks and Anise Brown, who participated in the Fannie Angelos Program for Academic Excellence at the University of Baltimore. Law school is infamously stressful. How did you cope with that?
Definitely learning how to ask for help and being comfortable with my story. All through schooling, I liked academic challenges, but it was the, like Keon said, culture shock of being in a professional school at a predominantly white institution, and me being from East Baltimore, having experienced homelessness, and at one point living in a house with no gas and electric, and different types of childhood traumas. And my peers never experienced that. You know, a lot of them spoke openly about coming from trust fund families. And so that more so was the difficult part, and watching how much of a support system that they had, well, their relatives were their support system. And for me, it was more so Professor Myerson and this program that empowered me and motivated me to keep moving, to not be ashamed of my story, to actually use it to lift other people and help other people. And that's what I love about the program the most, is that the emphasis is always, how are you going to give back?
Being successful in one's career has a lot to do with your social network. And Anise, mm-hmm. you've given us some idea of how you plug into that. Keon, how does this program help you make useful career connections?
We've had internships, some phenomenal internships. For instance, I believe Anise and I were both at Maryland Legal Aid Bureau at the same time. That was for us summer of 2014. The following summer, I was at the law office of Peter Angelos doing toxic tort work. Different networking events, for instance, the gala that we'll have next week is another one of those opportunities where you can meet influential people, not only in the legal community, but in the business community, healthcare, you name it, government. So just having an opportunity to form those type of connections has been priceless for us.
Anise, you're working at the state's attorney's office.
Yes.
What do you do there?
I am a law clerk in the Gun Violence Enforcement Division, and that division focuses on prosecuting non-fatal shootings in Baltimore City.
And where do you see your career heading?
I'm actually interviewing for a state's attorney's position today.
Oh, my gosh. Good luck. Afternoon.
Thank you very much.
And where do you see your career heading?
I definitely see myself remaining at the state's attorney's office and hopefully in a position of management. Like I said earlier, I wanted to be a sociologist. I wanted to make a sort of grassroots level changes to the community. And what I found working at the state's attorney's office is that there is a genuine care for what's going on in Baltimore, and there's a real emphasis on helping the community.
Keon, as we mentioned, you're preparing to take the bar exam in February. What kind of law are you planning to practice?
I'm thinking of business law. That I was a business major as an undergrad. Many of the concentration courses that I took at the University of Baltimore were business courses as well. So that's most likely the direction I'm going to be headed in, looking at ways to economically empower individuals in Baltimore City.
Well, good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much for having us.
And thank you for this conversation. Anise Brown and Keon Eubanks are alumni of the Fannie Angelos Program for Academic Excellence and are pursuing careers in the law. Earlier, we spoke with the co-founders of the program, UB Law Professors Michael Meyerson and Michael Higginbotham. The Fannie Angelos Program's fourth annual gala is a week from tomorrow, Thursday, November 9th, 6 p.m. at the Belvedere Hotel. More information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. On the Record salutes City Paper. After 40 years of vibrant news, opinion, and arts coverage, the Alt Weekly published its last issue today. Thanks for listening to On the Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.